This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Philly's Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne. I'm joined by John Brazier. Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year to you. I can't even say it. Happy New Year to you, Tom.
You're choked up.
Yeah. You know what? It's out of practice, because although we did one 2 weeks ago, so yeah. It's not like we're out of practice.
Absolutely.
Hey, you know what? This week, we have somebody who basically made his Major League debut the same year I made my Major League debut. One was on the field, one was in the office, so it's a little different. But we got Mike Lieberthal. What's up, Levy?
What's up, boys?
We can almost say we grew up together, right? 1994?
Yeah, broke
and
together.
That's when Tom became...
We look a little different now.
We do look a little different. And Tom also was the first year of being the real best friend of the Fanatic.
That's right.
In 1994.
Yeah, so. It was a big year, 94, for all of us.
Wow. Right here.
And 2022 is also a big year for Mike Lieberthal, because in 2 weeks, you're joining our club that we joined a while ago.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a big party here.
Big 5-0. You ready for that?
Wow. I mean, it's just a number, right? I mean,
it is a number.
It's what they say, but you're supposed to remember the big one.
Yeah, well, just stay immature like Tom and I, and you're good to go, right?
Yeah, no, you're only young once. You're only young once, but you can be immature forever, Mike.
I hear you.
Hey, did we pull? I mean, we know that you've been doing a lot of golfing. We really appreciate you taking the time off the golf course.
I haven't done any golfing.
Is that
in
true?
I just started back.
Huh? Why is that?
Well, December is the craziest month. I actually hate it. I mean, with three kids, three boys, it's just the holidays, the presents. I mean, they're still young, to where you got to do the elf on the shelf. I mean, it's just a mess. Really, in Southern California, it's been horrible weather in December. Yeah.
Now, how old? The oldest
we've
been
is in
the
how 40s, old? 40s, raining every day.
Oh,
but now it's good.
Mike, how old's the oldest?
13.
Wow. Okay, so it's close.
He's already had the voice change, and
yeah,
it's a little different now.
All right.
13, well, 11, and 9.
Now that video games stopped, because I know we often talked about you had the perfect life. You basically would play video games. You'd work out. You'd play golf, and you come back home.
Exactly, John. You have no idea these video games now. The two younger ones are just Fortnite fiends. They all have their monitors, their PlayStations. Now my 13-year-old, I had to get him a computer, a PC, because now he's going to play on PC. So it's just Call of Duty, Fortnite. It's just crazy. Everybody has their headphones on.
And do they?
So, yeah, that hasn't really stopped.
Do they follow, like, the gamers? Like, are they...
My 13-year-old is like a pro. Unbelievable. That's why he had to go to PC, so it just runs after. But, yeah, he's got, like, the mic. He's, like, streaming himself now. It's just crazy.
Hey, colleges are giving scholarships now for
these
esports, so maybe you got something on your hands right there.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That's one avenue. If he doesn't make it in sports, there you go.
Now, also, speaking of golf, because Tom brought it up, was it only a couple years ago where you won your club? Now you're out in LA suburbs. You won your club championship, right? And then if I remember correctly, you dove into a pond to celebrate.
Yeah, it was a 2-foot pond. So basically I dove into mud. And no, I don't think anybody's done it since. And I did it. And I had nothing to wear because I was just covered in mud. And all I had was, from Halloween, is a Captain America outfit that was in my locker from a Halloween game that we had. So I had to put on my Captain America outfit and take a picture with the trophy. It was pretty fun. I don't think it'll be repeated.
Wow, that's tremendous. Are you not used to winning or something? Like, you were so surprised you were winning, you were jumping in ponds and dressing as Captain America? Was it that much of a shock to you?
It was. It wasn't very professional. Because the guy, we both made bogeys, and I was ahead by a stroke. So if he made the par, I would have gone to X. He missed the putt. I just went down on my knees. Didn't even shake his hand and just jumped in the lake.
So the sportsmanship wasn't exactly stellar yeah. either right there.
You're right.
How are the courses out there, Mike? I mean, obviously, you know, Pebble Beach, you think of that, but you're Southern California. I mean, I always think in Philadelphia, and you can, you know, have your opinions too, but I just think the courses here are just so classic in Philly. You know, some of the old classic courses with the big trees.
Unbelievable courses. I'm just lucky I was able to play a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. How does it compare
Darien,
to playing?
Aronomy,
oh, sure.
Pine Valley. It's just, you know, Philly Country Club. But it's the same here. I'm telling you, there's Riviera, LA Country Club, Bel Air Country Club. Mm. You could count 10 courses within, you know, 50-mile radius that are just unbelievable here. So it is definitely the golf mecca here.
Obviously,
you just travel up north to, you know, Monterey, and you have all the
Pebble Beach
there.
And all that Spyglass. What is your favorite golf course you've ever played on?
Oh, God, I love Monterey. I would probably just say Pebble.
Yeah.
Because of the history.
And you mentioned playing the Philly courses. Like, it's kind of legendary, the Atlanta Braves, Maddux and Smoltz and Glavine. And, you know, every time they were on the road, they'd go to a town and they'd get their tee time wherever they were. Did you do that when you were a player?
Oh, never. I mean, players, I mean, unless you're a pitcher that pitches, you know, once every 5 days, they have time to play golf and they're not worried about getting hurt. I mean, as far as position players, there's no chance. I mean, you know, my days were on the couch, you know, on the off days, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks. But, yeah, you don't want to get hurt. I mean, out there on the course, it could happen. And so it's not really worth it. But that's what the off seasons were for. But now that, you know, in retirement, it's the only thing that really keeps me competitive, which I love. I love practicing. And, you know, and not really an injury-prone sport when you're in a cart with a cocktail and, pretty relaxing.
That's the life.
All right, well, let's go into the competition when you were younger. So here you are. You grew up out in L.A. area, and your dad was a scout, I guess, at that time for the Tigers, right? I know he's worked for Giants, Tigers, maybe another team.
Right. He was with the Giants when I was, like, in high school, and I think by the time I was drafted, he was full-time with the Tigers.
Okay. So was it pretty much a given that you were going to be a baseball player because of your dad's job when you were younger?
No, I played Pop Warner football until high school and baseball. And once I got to high school, my dad was like, I guess you should just focus on baseball year round. And that's what I did. And I was literally playing every day, traveling, playing probably three different teams. And probably by my sophomore year, I mean, I wasn't a catcher until my senior year, but, I knew I had the skills, the arm strength and the bat speed, so maybe I can do something, but you never know whether you're going to be how high, where you're going to go in the draft or where you're going to go to college. I mean, you just got to keep improving every year. And, you know, switching positions my senior year really made a big difference.
And who guided – was that your dad guiding you on that? Was that a coach or was that
my dad.
Decision?
I mean, I was trying to be a shortstop. You know, he had these track lessons. I was trying to – you know, going to the local college with his track coach and running hills and trying to get my 60 time down. I just couldn't get it below 7. I think 7 flat was my best 60 time. So he was like, you're not going to be a shortstop. You might be able to be a third baseman or a first baseman or maybe an outfielder, but then you really have to hit and get a lot of home runs. So I had the arm strength for catching. And so I made the transition, you know, that senior year. And I had caught before, so... you know, it was really the only position I felt that was, you know, the quickest way to the major leagues, which everyone told me, all the scouts said, you know, catching, shortstop, center fielder, and pitching are really the spots you want to be in. But and it just worked out. You know?
How exciting was it, Levy? I mean, here you are, you're a senior in high school. Like, John and I can't even imagine this, but, you know, you're a senior in high school, and you're talking about scouts, and, you know you're going to be drafted. And, you know, how exciting a time was that for you when you were a senior in high school, knowing that you were, you know, hoping you were going to get drafted or knowing you were going to get drafted?
Right. It was, I mean, we had a great team my senior year in high school. I think we were like rated number one in the nation at the time. And we just had a lot of kids on the team that I, you know, guys that I grew up with from Little League on up, and it was just a special team. And, you know, at that time there were scouts coming to, you know, so many games. I mean, you saw, you know, 20 to 50 scouts at every game. In today's day, it's totally different. They have all these tryouts now. So really, like, you go to all these tryouts and that's where you see the scouts. You don't see as many scouts at high school games or college games like you used to. But, yeah, it was more – I never knew, like, you know, where I was going to get drafted or what team or – I mean, you really don't know, you know, until the very end whether you're going to be drafted high enough. I knew if I was drafted in the first two rounds, I would probably find – it's just that opportunity they give you. And, you know, I went to the colleges, too. I went on recruiting trips to Texas A&M, Arizona State, U of A, and Cal Berkeley were my four trips I went on. So that was kind of exciting too, just kind of checking out different colleges. And,
yeah. Where do you think you would have gone if you didn't go the baseball route?
I find Arizona State. I just love the campus there, the girls, the facilities. Texas A&M recruited me hard. It was just not, you know, my type of school, especially coming from Southern California. Just I mean, beautiful facilities. I mean, great team, great coach, but it was just, I signed Arizona State knowing, like, God, this is like almost like a mini Southern California. So, you know, once I was drafted, though, I knew that wasn't going to play.
Yeah, especially third overall. And I have to ask you about a game you had in high school. You hit a solo home run, two-run shot. You hit four home runs, and one was a solo, one was a two-run homer, another three-run homer, and a grand slam.
Right.
And I guess the story, when I was reading it, Mike, it said, like, after the grand slam, that was your third home run. You came out, and you actually curtain call, which you don't see that too often in high school, huh, John? But then you came back and hit the fourth home run. Like, were there scouts at that game? I mean, I got to think, if there's a scout sitting in the crowd at that game, they're signing you.
There was many. We were supposed to get rained out because it was pouring rain like up until 10 minutes before game time. And yeah, we were supposed to get rained out, and luckily we played. But like I said, my senior year, we were rated really high. We had a lot of like just student body at our games. Like, we must have had like at least a thousand kids that would just show up to baseball games and just watch us play. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was just kind of, you know, one of those games. And I'm glad it's on the back of my rookie card where I can still show everybody today that it really happened.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Nice.
All right, so then you're 17 years old. As Tom mentioned, you get drafted in the first round, third overall by the Phillies. What was going through your head? A, have you ever been to Philadelphia? B, what did you know about the team, the organization? C, what were your thoughts, again, in general, when you got drafted by the Phillies?
I knew the Phillies weren't very good. I really didn't know much about the team except for Mike Schmidt. And also I hated the maroon colors. I was like, geez, ugliest colors in the league.
Well, we changed those in 1992. So did you complain? Is that why we changed the color in 92?
I don't know, but I remember when I was drafted by the Phillies. It's like, oh, God, they're horrible. I hate the colors. I only know Mike Schmidt. That's it.
And you've never been to Philadelphia?
You know, no, never. I mean, the only team I followed, the Dodgers. My dad had season tickets when I was like 8 years old for about 4 years. So, you know, Ron Say, Steve Garvey, Steve Sachs. Steve Sachs was my favorite player. So I really only knew basically the Dodgers. you know, I knew a lot of Cardinals players, I think. They were really popular then with Ozzie Smith. But, yeah, it was really the only team I followed.
Did you know
it
that?
It wasn't like today where you can have an MLB package and watch like 12 yeah, right. different teams.
Mike, did you know that Steve Sachs has a instrumental role with the Fanatic, right? He has a big tie-in with the Fanatic.
That's
Tom,
true.
Can you tell Libby the story here?
That is true. Well, when you were talking about all your favorite players, John and I were making faces like, oh, yeah, great. Steve Garvey, Ron Say, you know, these guys, we hated growing up. So it's funny.
Right.
You're opposite. But, yeah, Steve Sachs.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that story. But, you know, Lasorda and the Fanatic always had their long-running feud. And the Fanatic's best friend at the time was Dave Raymond, and he got Steve Sachs to steal Tom Lasorda's jersey so he could put the jersey on the dummy that the Fanatic used to beat the heck out of. And Lasorda was not happy, and he's like, "Who gave him that jersey?" And nobody would admit.
Like, I don't think Steve Sachs. Did Steve Sachs ever come clean to Tom Lasorda?
No, I don't
think so. He probably never did, right?
So, yeah, Steve
Sachs. And then did he come out of the dugout trying to get the jersey from him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He smacked him over the head.
Okay,
Didn't he beat the Fanatic? Like, take the dummy and slam it over his head?
They're long-running feud, Lasorda and the Fanatic. Long-running.
Oh, okay. I remember that.
Hey, Levy, I was in a car one time. We honored Tommy. I forget what it was, at the vet. We honored Tommy, and I had to take him around to radio stations to promote, you know, whatever night we were doing with Tommy Lasorda. And – you know, so now after the third radio station, I've now been with him for about, you know, a couple hours. You know, we're starting to, you know, get to know each other. And I said, hey, Tommy, let me ask you a question. Was that an act or did you really not like the Fanatic? He answers the question very slowly. And then all of a sudden he starts picking up, and all of a sudden he starts, next thing you know,
Spittle's
spitting
coming out,
and he's mad and he's red in the face, and I can't turn off the spigot. I'm trying to like, all right,
how do I?
Yeah, like he was like, he's not good for children and he does this and blah, 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 blah.
Oh my God. He had a serious beef with the Fanatic. That is classic.
Yeah, I saw firsthand that it really was real.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That just made it more entertaining than every time you guys played.
Exactly. Talking. Just watching Tommy just go nuts was always part of the fun.
Well, and the Fanatic would follow him, especially when he did the Nutrisystem. He would follow him, and I guess Tommy had the pigeon-toed walk, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the Fanatic would imitate him with his belly out, and then finally Lasorda saw that, and then finally he wouldn't take the lineup card out anymore.
No, yeah, yeah.
Right? He had one of his coaches do it.
God.
Yeah, he'd throw balls
that
at the Fanatic.
Great.
Fun stuff, Leiby. I get back to when you started, you debuted in 94, and that's really interesting time, I think, in Philly's history there because, you know, you said, yeah, when you were drafted in 90, the team wasn't great, but then all of a sudden this great season in 93,
right.
you make your debut in 94. Dutch, you know, I guess was he a guy who you leaned on in terms of, some guidance and pointers?
Yeah, I really didn't see him too much. I mean, the only time I was really around, you know, like the 93 club was in spring training. Hmm. So it was really like just keep your mouth shut. And, I mean, the personalities on that team, just being around, like, you know, Kruk and Mariano Duncan was a huge – I used to watch him. Like I said, when my dad had season tickets with the Dodgers, he was a shortstop for the Dodgers for years. And I'm like, wait a second. Am I really on the field with Mariano Duncan?
Nice.
And, you know, that was like kind of special for me. And, so those guys, I really didn't hang out with too much because it was just 93 and spring training here and there. And when I got called up, it was halfway through the 94 season when Darren, I think he broke his collarbone halfway through the year in between the innings pitch in the dirt by Toby Borland, I think it was. Toby came up, threw a ball in the dirt, hit him in the collarbone, and Lee Thomas calls me up. Like, that night, I'm in Rochester, New York. It was after a game, and he's like, Levy, I need you. Darren broke his collarbone, and we need you up. And you're not going to play tomorrow. We're playing the Pirates, but we're going to L.A. to, you know, on our trip to see the Dodgers the next day, so you'll be playing the first game in L.A. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Oh, my God. I can't eat. Couldn't eat for, like, 2 weeks.
Wow.
Left, like, 60 tickets the first game I played. But, you know, I got my first hit that game off Pedro Astacio. It was cool. Got that hit out of the way. And, it was just it's like a memory that, you know, seems like it was yesterday. But Yeah. It was just kind of, and then the next year I came up the same way. I came up halfway through the season. I think Darren tore his knee ligaments, like leading off second base or something. And I came up the same way. I came up halfway through the season, and the Phillies were playing the Dodgers again. I was like, well, yeah, I know it's second year in a row, but we're going to LA tomorrow. So that was pretty crazy.
So you never really had the opportunity to pick Darren's brain because obviously you kept replacing him.
Yeah, because he was hurt. And then when I came up, yeah, he was rehabbing and I really wasn't around him too much.
Yeah, and then in 97, you know, he goes to Florida, but that really was your first year of, full time, correct?
Yep. Full time, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think 96, Santiago was there. And
yeah. Yep.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he one season, San Diego in 96, yep.
And so, you know what I find interesting, too, in someone's career, like, you know, you had such a long career that, you know, all the managers you played for, so you played for Fregosi when you first came in, which, you know, you had the old school Jim Fregosi and Johnny Padres and all these guys. And then you go, I guess, Terry Francona, right? And then then Larry Boa. And then I guess you got the tail end of your career, you got Charlie Manuel.
And Charlie Manuel. Right?
And then the Dodgers. Who was your manager of the Dodgers in the 1 year you played there?
Grady Little.
Grady Little, right. So you had you had a lot of old school guys, and that with a young guy thrown in there, Terry Francona's first opportunity. What were playing for some of those guys like?
Yeah, everyone was so different. I mean, Fregosi was kind of like a Larry Boa. He was a high octane personality guy, and so was Larry. And getting too different with Terry Francona and Charlie Manuel, like two opposite sides of the spectrum.
Right.
I enjoy playing with all my managers, and I learned a lot from all of them differently. I guess that's just the way, you know, in sports, especially with guys switching teams so much in these days. I mean, I was lucky enough to come to the Phillies for so long. I mean, normally you might be with one manager for 8 to 10 years. But in today's day, it's just like, seems like guys have a new manager every year almost. It's, you know, guys switch up. But I feel like most managers are just, you know, you really want to be a player's manager. There's not too many guys that are burning bridges with players anymore. I think everybody's pretty much on the same page. You know, it's all about winning, and it's just, you know, like I said, it's a different era in baseball now than it was before.
Yeah, well, you had 13 years with the Phillies, you know, and it's that period, Mike, you know, it's been talked about before, you know, from 1994 to 2006 was, you know, the stretch you were in, and it just so happened, you know, the Phillies did not make the playoffs in that stretch, but you know, you had that nucleus, you know, of players. You know, it was Doug Glanville, Scott Rowland, it was Wolfie, it was Pat, you know, Bobby Abreu comes into the mix.
Yeah, Kurt Schilling for a lot of those years.
Yep, Schilling.
Right. Rico Bronia.
Rico, Marlon Anderson, you know.
Rex Hudler.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun players.
Yeah, fun players. And then I'm just like, you know, that was the nucleus. And like, you know, you guys were together for a number of years. You know, it must have been frustrating, you know, I guess each year. Would you talk about it, though? Like, hey, you know, this is the year, you know, if they make this move, they make that move, bring in, you know, somebody here, you know, it's going to improve your chances. But would there be like a collective frustration with that core group, you know, after a few years of not making the playoffs?
I think, anytime you play in Philadelphia, I mean, you're expected to win. I mean, even though we had a couple years of growth where maybe we weren't expected to win, but it's tough when you do play in Philly and you know, you're not producing. That's why I had so many managers. I mean, you don't win in Philadelphia, they're going to change managers, you know, pretty much every year. It's just, you know, it's part of the game, but, I just think we were maybe lacking on the pitching side. And, you know, if you remember, obviously the Braves won 10 years in a row. I mean, they had a dynasty with their pitching staff. So it was really a tough time having one team that was so dominant for 10 years. You know, we came close maybe a few years, but it's just, you know, I don't think people just remember, like, you know, just the Braves were literally won the division, I think, 10 years in a row.
Well, let's talk about 1999, which was your first year you made the All-Star team, and phenomenal year. I mean, you hit 31 home runs, you had 96 RBI, you hit 300, you won the Gold Glove I mean, there's not much more you could really do. Talk about that year. Why, you know, what did you see that year coming?
I think I was healthy. I think I hit 20 home runs. It was in 97. And then 98, I think I was plagued by an injury. I only played maybe 3/4 of the year. I don't have that many at bats. I can't remember what injury I had in 98. But then 99 was just, I felt great. I was healthy the whole year. I think I played like 130-some games catching. And it was just, you know, it was just one of those years. I felt like my whole career, I always had something, you know, with a knee problem or a torn abdominal, or it just felt like there was always like some kind of injury plaguing me at some point. But it just felt like I felt the strongest and I felt the healthiest, and it was just, you know, one of those years where you just feel great.
Well, you joined Johnny Bench, Lance Parrish, and Pudge as the only catchers that have hit 30 home runs the same season while winning the Gold Glove. You also became the 8th Major League catcher to bat 300 and hit 30 home runs in the same season, and you also became the first Philly to bat 300 and hit 30 home runs since the Bull.
The Bull!
1977.
How about that, Levy?
Yeah, that's pretty good year.
That's what I keep telling all my golf friends, you know, the course. I forget. You know, they tell me, Jesus, you look terrible, Levy. I mean, you could barely walk your ball. I'm like, that's it. His body's a lot older than I look from the outside.
Well, especially as a catcher, like, man. I mean, you got – you can thank
so
Bernie Williams
injuries.
For a lot of that, right?
I mean, exactly. I ain't even talking about the golf cart injuries that I've had over the last
year. Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazons of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.
Hey, one of the great calls of all time from Harry Callis was the game, Levy, where you had the pinch hit home run. It was in 98, and we're losing 7-1 to the Pirates going into the ninth inning, and we wound up winning 8-7 on your 3-run home run. Do you remember the circumstances of that game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know it was my off day. I think I maybe caught maybe a week or 2 weeks straight. So it was my off day. I was losing, 7-2, 7-1, and it was big rain delay. So I just went inside and got my workout in. I'm pumping weights, knowing like, this game's over. They're going to call it. Or, you know, I'm not coming in the game. So might as well get the workout in. Sure enough, we come back on the field. I don't know what time it was, midnight or whatever. And yeah. We only had to play like 2 innings, I think. And so I'm just, you know, sitting in the clubhouse waiting. We get a rally, and, you know, they use one pinch hitter, another pinch hitter. There's only like maybe one or two guys on the bench. So I'm like, oh, God. You know, so I wind up getting a bat. I'm sitting on the bench. Next thing you know, it's like, Lee, you're our last guy. So get ready. You're probably third in the hole. Next thing you know, I'm on deck, and then I know I'm going to probably get a chance to hit. I think there was 2 outs or something. I forget who was in front of me. Maybe Kevin Jordan got on, and it was like, yeah, and I hit the home run. There was only like 50 fans left.
Exactly. Yeah, but there were 50 excited fans.
They're all above the dugout. I'm like waving to them, like pumping my fist like there's 50,000 people in the stands.
Hey, let's go to another game when this is another tie-in with a Fanatic. On April 27th, 2003, you caught Kevin Millwood. It was a Fanatic's birthday, right? Was it Fanatic's birthday?
Well, the headline is it was the Philly Fanatic's birthday, and then it just so happened that Millwood threw a no-hitter. That was kind of the the other story. But yeah, that game.
Yeah, so and you caught that. So talk about that.
Absolutely.
You know, do catcher? Do you get nervous when because it's not really nothing you can control. It's basically, you know, the pitcher when he's getting closer to no hitter. Are you feeling that as a catcher? Like there's pressure on you to call the right pitch because you don't want to blow a no hitter.
Of course, the last couple of innings, it's like, you know, you put down one. You know, you're like, you don't want to make that mistake calling it off pitch. But, I mean, if you look at that game, Millwood was unbelievable with that fastball command. And he always had that comeback fastball that would start at like a left-handed hitter's hip and then come back for a strike on the inside corner. And when he had that working, it was just an unbelievable pitch. And he had it the whole game. And it was just, you know, it was my only no-hitter, so it's, you know, it's pretty exciting. I was very nerve-wracking. Maybe if it was my fourth no-hitter to catch, I just, you know, I probably wouldn't be as nervous. But, yeah, that was a special day.
And John Brazier, can you name the guy who made the last out for the who had the last put out? Do you remember what it was?
The last put out for the Phillies?
Yeah, you know, how the game ended.
Yeah.
Who made that last?
Well, I always feel like it's a third baseman that makes the last out.
No, no. Hey, Libby, do you remember?
I mean, it had to have been a ground ball because didn't Tomei catch it? No?
No, as far as how I remember, wasn't it Ricky Ledee
out
in center?
Right.
Ledee. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he ran down a ball in center field and made the last out. Absolutely.
Did not know that.
Ricky Ledee. But I love it because they interviewed Millwood after the game, and L.A. did. L.A.'s on the field with Millwood, and he's like, so, Kevin, you know, are you not congratulations on your no-hitter. He's like, do you feel bad that you kind of stole the Fanatics thunder today? It was his birthday, and here you are throwing a no-hitter.
Oh, that's funny. What was that date?
April 27th, 2003.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And
April 27th.
And then the next season, Libby, we're opening up Citizens Bank Park. How cool was it to be part of that?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty awesome. Just for the whole, you know, the construction of the park, where home plate's going to go. I mean, it was like a, you know, three-year process to where, you know, you're standing at where home plate is today and there's no stands. It's just all dirt, but they know that this is where home plate's going to be, too. You know, to the final product, which is unbelievable. And I still believe that they, you know, Philadelphia's ballpark still has the best food of any ballpark around.
Nice. Agreed.
Still amazes me.
Yeah, they don't have sushi like out in L.A.,
like,
right?
New stadium. They just put in, like, the, you know, the new Raiders stadium and the Rams, SoFi, and the food is terrible. It's like, how do you have just terrible food at, you know, brand new state-of-the-art stadiums, and it's just, they got to step up their game on that part.
Hey, Libby, too, we were trying to think. Now, obviously, your era was the big fan group era. You had Padilla's Flotilla, and you had all kinds of ones, Burl's Girls. I know you had one, but was it Libby's Ladies? What was it?
Libby's Ladies.
Libby's Ladies.
There, I mean, there wasn't that many of them. There was probably about, you know, maybe 15, 20. Well, you know, I didn't get a ballpark-sized ladies, but it was,
Sal's,
you know,
pals.
It was kind of nice. Yeah. Everyone would, you know, kind of laugh and give me a hard time from the dugout. There's Libby's Ladies, upper deck.
What was your favorite of the fan groups?
They were like left center, upper deck.
What was your favorite of the fan groups?
Wolfie was the best.
Yeah, that was the original Wolfpack.
They were dedicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. That was pretty awesome.
And then also, if you remember, you had – two great giveaways. I'm sure you had more, but the two I remember, you had, if you remember the Bammer Bear. Bammer Bears were big back then. They were like these little,
oh yeah,
you know, it was almost like a little beanbag type thing,
like
right?
A beanie baby kind of thing.
Beanie baby type.
Yes.
And it was red, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
Then the other one, I remember I was talking to Scott Brandeth today that he said that your bobblehead doll was the first bobblehead doll to have a removable catcher's mask.
The mask came off.
Oh, really?
Yep. First one, you made history there.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that one's actually in Dodger Stadium. They have, like, right when you walk in, they have probably every bobblehead, baseball bobblehead, you know, behind glass. So I always take my kids. I'm like, guys, find Dad's bobblehead? And they just go right to it now. And exactly where it is.
Well, you're forgetting the most famous bobblehead, and that is your Scranton Wilkes-Barre Red Baron bobblehead doll that they actually had a giveaway when Libby was on the team is featured in the office.
Yeah, in the office.
Yeah.
Certain scenes.
Yeah, what's the guy's name?
I know. How did I not get any residuals from that? I mean, I'm still owed a little money.
So you've seen it? Like, yeah. If you watch The Office, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. The classic episode when they clean Dwight's desk off. Every piece, you know, that's on his desk and winds up in the vending machine. And then they have, like, the camera rolls to the vending machine, like, each little individual item. And there's my bobblehead. Classic. I love showing my friends that.
Well, but you were. You must have your SAG card because I know you were. You appeared in Summer Catch,
yes.
Right? The movie. We all went to that premiere, remember?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The credits. Credits roll out.
That Mike Tolan. We have a lot of questions about that. How was that experience, first of all?
It was in Cincinnati. It was really quick. It was, it was nice to meet Freddie Prinze Jr. at the time, and he actually had a pitching body double. So he wasn't even really pitching, but, Ken Griffey Jr. they used, Doug Glanville they used, and
Pat Burrell.
It was just like a 20-minute skit right before our batting practice. And they were like, yeah, can we just, it won't take very long. And, you'll get like $6 residual checks every year.
Right.
The scene doesn't come up until the credits roll at the very end. But
So you met Freddie Prinze, but you didn't meet Jessica Biel?
No. God, she was my favorite back then. I know.
Too bad.
I know. It was just a small part, but yeah, it's pretty funny. It's funny when you see my residual checks from that. It's like $1.83 every year. You're like, okay.
Well, I know how excited and honored, I guess, were you? I guess a couple times. But when you did retire, Libby, in 2008, whose idea was it to have you sign a one-day contract with the Phillies so you could retire a Philly?
I believe David Montgomery is the one who called me to, sign that one contract, come in for the day. It's great. I think a lot of teams have done it over the last, 10, 20 years. And it's just, a special way to kind of end your career. And, I was there for a long time. And, Philly's where my heart is, and especially, in sports. And it's just, I still follow all the teams, whether it's basketball or football. And, it was just a special day.
And who decided that contract was worth $4? Like, where do you come up with $4?
I have no idea. I know.
Did you ever get the $4?
I mean, does it really matter?
I never understood that either. But $4.
Right. I have no idea. I don't think I got the $4.
Well, and Libby, the other big thing, obviously, 2012, you get inducted into the Phillies Wall of Fame, with Steve Carlton, you mentioned Mike Schmidt, all the guys, Greg Luzinski. Talk about, getting inducted into the Phillies Wall of Fame.
Oh, this is something that you'll cherish forever. I mean, really, to be mentioned with, like, all those names and players, it was just, just thinking about, the history of the Phillies players that have come through there and, the players that will be going on that wall in the future. It's just awesome. It's awesome to be part of that weekend. And, I've missed it for the last couple of years, I think, with the whole COVID deal. So I really haven't seen a lot of guys for a few years. But just to come back every year and see the same guys that you see, that you kind of grew up with, to be a piece on that wall, I can't wait to take my kids. My kids really haven't been there. I mean, Merrick, my oldest, was there when I retired and went on the wall, but they're all excited to kind of go back maybe this year and kind of check everything out and see what their dad did over the course of his career.
That's awesome. And, John, Mike, one of the reasons we love you, Libby, is you're very humble. But let's just remind people, in Philly's catching history, Libby is number one in hits, number one in doubles, number one in home runs, number one in RBIs, number one in batting average, number one in slugging percentage. So it's like, it's kind of like the Wall of Fame was meant for you, Libby. You're
right. I'm very lucky.
Very
good. Thank you, God, for giving me the ability to play baseball.
Well, awesome. And I do remember, I think it was your first time back when you were now kind of, you're basically an old-timer now, you know, once you're on the Wall of Fame. And I do remember the Fanatic having a little fun with you when they announced your name when you were coming out on the field. The Fanatic was, I think, walking like an old man just to, make you feel comfortable.
I know. It's unbelievable. 50?
It is hard to believe. Like, you're an old-timer at 40, you know, whatever you were, you know. 45 years old, but
and Mike, you're pretty lucky too that, you know, being a starting catcher, you never got the treatment from the Fanatic, which I don't know if you remember this. The Fanatic, when he does the lineups, whenever the backup catcher would fill in, usually on a Sunday or, you know, a day game after a night game, when the backup catcher would come in, the Fanatic, they do the whole lineup. Then when it comes to whoever it's, whether it's Todd Pratt or whether it's Sal Fasano or whoever's a backup quarterback catcher, they'd say, "In catching, Todd Pratt." And then the Fanatic could give like the hunched shoulders, like, "What's going on here?
Yeah, where's Dutch?
Where's Dutch? Where's Leiby? Where's so-and-so?" See, he's Fanatic is very disrespectful to the backup catchers.
Yeah, but not to Leiby.
Still do that to the backup catchers?
What's that?
Does the Fanatic still do that to the backup
of
catchers
course.
When they play?
Absolutely.
I think if I remember correctly, Pratt got mad at the Fanatic, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the Fanatic was making fun of his big head, too.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Well, then,
right.
Then he should be mad.
There's a little bit of that, too, but it's all good. All right, so, John, you got Leiby's quiz?
Yeah, Mike, I think I gave you a warning that you have a quiz, but actually, in this course of this conversation, you've already got one of the questions right because you stole it from me.
You know the last time I had a quiz?
When is that? High school?
1990.
When
I was in high school.
Well, this is easy. Quiz. And again, you only need to get 6 out of 8. It's multiple choice. It's about your life. And again, you're already 1 for 1. So, because my one question was going to be, you know, on June 30th, 1994, you had your first career hit against the Dodgers. Who was the pitcher? It was going to be either Chan Ho Park, Pedro Estacio, Tom Candiotti.
Right.
Or Ramon Martinez, and you obviously
you got that
already
one right.
Said right, so Pedro Estacio.
You got one already. You're off to a good start, Leiby.
All right, you went.
There we go. That was a hard one.
You went to Westlake High School in California, right? Which of these celebrities did not go to Westlake High School? I'm going to name 4 people. 3 of them went to Westlake. 1 did not. You got to tell me which one did not. Okay. A is Kobe Jones, former pro soccer player. He's in the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. B is LPGA golfer Danielle Kang. C is Oral Hershiser. D is Christian Yelich. Who did not go to Westlake High School?
Oral Hershiser.
That is correct, because he is actually from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. So he played ice hockey. He played ice hockey with my older brother, Drew. So there you have it. You are now 2 for 2. All right, your first minor league team was the Martinsville Phillies, located in Martinsville, Virginia. Which of these 4 people was not a teammate? Okay. Was not a teammate. Okay. Gary Bennett, Jim Buck, Lamar Foster, J.J. Munoz.
Buck was not.
Yes, because he was
a Philly.
Yes, he was the owner of the team. So he was,
yeah,
he had more important things to do. So you are now 3 for 3. How
rolling
about that?
Right along.
Jesus,
all
right. Man.
You have the most home runs of all time, as Tom alluded to earlier, of all Phillies catchers with 150. Who is second with 134? Is it Stan Lapata, Darren Dalton, Andy Semenik, or Chooch? Stan Lapata, Darren Dalton, Andy Semenik, or Carlos Ruiz?
It's either Andy Semenik or Dalton.
Okay.
You are
correct in your
Semenik.
No, it's Darren Dalton.
Dutch.
All right.
Oh, my. He had 134?
134, yep, he did. All right.
Wow.
All right. I thought you were going to get that one because two of them are a little hard. You're a big golf fan. We know you're a big golf fan. We talked to you about golfing and you follow golf. Which pairing, U.S. or Europe, it could be either the European team or U.S. team in the Ryder Cup, has played the most together in the Ryder Cup history? They've paired together 15 times in the Ryder Cup. Okay. So I'm going to give you 4 different pairings. Which one is paired up 15 different times? The most in Ryder Cup history. Is it Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth? Is it Tom Kite and Curtis Strange? Is it Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson? Or is it Seve Ballesteros and Jose Maria Olazabal?
Um, Say the grouping again.
Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, Tom Kite and Curtis Strange, Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson, and Seve Ballesteros and Jose Marie Olazabal. Even though it's with a Z, I think they pronounce it Thabal.
Wow.
You can go to a lifeline, Tom Burgoyne, if you want. He doesn't know
the answers. I'm going to I'm staying away from the old guys. I'm going with either the Stenson Rose or the Reed Speed.
Well, unfortunately, it's Seve and Jose Marie Olazabal. Yeah.
Jesus.
Old school.
Wrong on both.
All right.
Damn.
All right.
I would never get that.
All right. You only have, let's see.
He's got to go 3 for 3.
He's got to go 3 for 3. All right.
No pressure.
You have the fifth most career home runs of any Jewish Major League Baseball player. Which player is not in front of you? Okay. Hank Greenberg, Sean Green, Brad Ausmus, or Al Rosen?
Brad Ausmus.
There you go.
Bang.
All right.
Back on track.
Now you just need two in a row. Debbie Nacido, who just came into this office while we're talking and is hopefully not going to interrupt our podcast. It's one of your favorite people. When you first met her, I think you said to somebody, "Who's that crazy lady who works upstairs?" Right? And you've since become great friends with
her. Nothing's ever changed.
So what is Debbie Nacido's middle name? Is it Angelina, Gabriella, Lucia, or Ann? So you got
Angelina. Say the first two again.
Angelina, Gabriella, Lucia, or Ann?
Angelina.
No, it's the American sounding one. It's Ann.
It's Ann.
I didn't think it would be that boring.
Debbie Ann Nacido. I threw you off, giving you three Italian names and then one whatever. All right.
Oh my God.
So if you get this one, we're gonna call you a winner, and
absolutely,
you're gonna get a Fanatic prize pack.
And I was close with Angelina.
That is true. That is true. But you got one last one. This is kind of a hard one. You can have a lifeline since you didn't use it with Burgoyne if you need some help, okay? First All-Star game was in 1999. Of all the players in that game, there were 64 players, right? Starters and reserves, not coaches, just players. 64 players were in that All-Star game in 1999. How many wore a Phillies uniform, including yourself, at any point in their career, okay?
Aye.
So, was it 5? Was it 12? Was it 20? Or was it 8? And again, you have a lifeline with Tom Burgoyne. 5, 12, 20, or 8? It's pretty remarkable.
5, 12, 20, or 8?
Yeah. Players that at one point wore a Phillies uniform.
I'm going to say 12.
You don't even need a lifeline. You got it right,
bang,
and you win the Phillies, 12. The Philly Fanatic prize pack. Here are the players in that game. Here's the players in that game that wore, with a jersey at one point.
Yeah.
Kurt Schilling, Leiby, obviously, Andy Ashby, Kurt Bottenfield, Paul Bird, Kevin Millwood, Billy Wagner, Kenny Lofton, Jim Thome, Pedro Martinez, Jose Offerman, and Roberto Hernandez.
Wow.
All those guys at one point wore a Phillies uniform.
That's unbelievable, actually.
Is that crazy?
Yeah.
Bottenfield. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Well, and Offerman, too. I was going through the list, and I said, I think he did play for the Phillies. I had to Google it and then find out. So there you have it.
Wow.
All right.
There it is.
Well, just to let you know,
Debbie's going to be.
You're going to have the wrath. Yeah, you're going to have the wrath of Debbie Nacido next time you see her. So, but
how do you not know it's Ann?
It's a good impersonation. Sounds just like her.
Like, I've never seen your driver's license.
You J.O.
You Jagger.
Well, Leiby, totally appreciate you spending time with us. It was kind of fun going back and talking about your career. Hopefully we're going to see you soon, this season, back in town or wherever. I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, love talking to you guys. Anytime.
All right, Leiby, really appreciate it.
We'll see you.
Yep. Sooner than later.
I'll see you in a few weeks, bud.
All right.
Sounds good. Thanks, Leiby.
See ya.
Yeah, good boy.
There he was, John. Mike Lieberthal. We love that guy.
You know what? There's certain guys. Obviously, every guy we have on the podcast, we picked him because we had a personal relationship with him. But, someone like Leiby is someone like Randy Wolf as well. where, you know, we were both young in our career. Mm-hmm. For me, I started in 94. You started earlier. So it's someone that, you know, you kind of grew up with almost, or you know, not grew up with, you worked with in your career.
Yeah,
you know, and saw him through, and then you see him as alumni, which is kind of funny because you're still here.
Yeah, it makes
and
you feel
alumni,
old.
Right. Yeah, you know, and then we just talked about Levy's turning 50, and, you know, he's approaching our age.
Yeah, it's awesome, and I think it. You know, you have to give his stats too, right, John?
Right.
I mean,
well, when you said that, all those stats right there: first in slugging percentage, first in
RBIs,
home runs, and RBI,
double, you know,
right.
average. Yeah,
it's just that he just. And I think a lot of it is that he didn't play in the playoffs.
Yes.
So you know, he didn't have the glory that the national audience, and then you know, people from here. You know, he wasn't on that 93 team. He wasn't on the 2000, even the 17 that made the playoffs, or 2018 that obviously won it. So, yes, I think he's very underrated, and obviously it was well-deserved when he got the Wall of Fame.
Absolutely. And just even that core group of guys, you know, if they didn't make the playoffs, and it's like you forget about how good some of those guys were,
yep.
you know, and Leiby's perfect example. So, yeah,
and
a great guy.
And as
too.
He mentioned, he had a lot of injuries. I mean,
yes, he did.
You know, I mean, he really did. I mean, he had the, you know, when he collided with Bernie Williams, right? He had an ankle injury.
That one when he's on first base, he wiped, you know, his ACL and
ACL and MCL and cartilage.
Yep.
He had removed a bone spur in his right elbow.
Groin.
Yep. I mean, just a lot of things. And think about, you know,
that
how many
it.
Surgeries Dutch had.
Yeah.
When you're a catcher, you're going through the ringer, right?
Yeah.
With all the surgeries. So, you know, he had all the stats to, you know, withstanding all that.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Well, great having Leiby. John, we'll have to do this again sometime soon, all right?
I think we'll do it in a couple weeks.
All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.